Hello and welcome back to All My Darlings, where we are reading Harp Song for a Radical, The Life and Times of Eugene Victor Debs by Margaret Young. We are on page 29, chapter 8. The wandering communist tailor, Wheatling, had prayed constantly to Jesus to bring his kingdom down out of the clouds and had cried out, as we continue to announce when he fled to America, that communism would be the kingdom of the saints that had been promised 1,800 years ago to those who lived in communal harmony with the worker Christ who might at any moment appear. The boundaries of nations will crumble when the Son of Man comes to judge the quick and the dead. He had written in 1842, while in exile at Lausanne, his own Christian communal system and guarantees of harmony and freedom, in which he had trumpeted loud enough to shake the clouds, "We want to be free. Free as the birds of the heavens, free to travel through life as only they do in happy flight and precious harmony." I don't know if you've ever, he obviously never watched Hummingbirds. Oh, goodness gracious. He had obviously never watched hummingbirds fight over a hummingbird feeder, especially at the end of the season. Yeah, there's no harmony there. A member of the Swan Brotherhood who had tailored away only when he needed money for his bread and the printing of his perfectionist socialist pamphlets, he had thrown his scissors into the lake with the hope that he would never see them again. But alas, he was to be pursued by scissors the rest of his life, even unto his grave. Scissors meaning his tailor scissors. I'm assuming he was, his profession was as a tailor. Also, I'm not talking about harmony, like that kind of false harmony. I can only imagine, because when you live outside of nature, that then you idealize it, and then so you think it's like there is a harmony in nature, but that harmony in nature, I would say there's a harmony in nature, but I would say it also is something that encompasses life and death. So there's a harmony to that life and death, birth and rebirth, that kind of thing. Not this where it's just all peaceful and tranquil all the time. You don't live near nature if you think that for very long. The message conveyed by Wheatling's song was very similar to those of Chartist agitators in the British Isles, of whom one had been Alan Pinkerton, the wanderer upon the Scottish moors, who, when he came to America in the year of the gold rush, had his mind upon the heavenly city of gold, but would change his mind when God, if it was God, not the devil, it opened a way to him to become a sleuth of the first magnitude, a detective hounding labor union organizers and labor strikers and anarchic rebels. That's the anarchy. I don't know why. I cannot say all of these different things of anarchy. Rebels, as in the case of the Molly Maguires. I didn't know that about Pinkerton, because it's famous in U.S. history. Wilhelm Wittling's wanderings in Europe as a sower of seed of propaganda for a new moral world, and not as a sewer of sleeves, pants, coats, skirts, had been made with a horsehair trunk of utopias of every cut and plan and every color there was, particularly that of Robert Owen, who in the long ago, when his phalanstery at New Harmony on the Wabash River in Indiana, which I just finished reading about, had already been wrecked, had announced that he had crossed the Rubicon between the old immortal world and the new moral world, a river that, ever widening, seemed to be bereft of a shore on either side, for he was still crossing it. As the romantic ex-tailor had come under the influence of Charles Fourier, the former textile mill owner and salesman who suffered from the fixed idea that the former cotton lord Robert Owen's utopia had been stolen from him, the only begetter and bearer of patent rights for his phalansteries, by which he would exile winter from the earth and would provide a cure-all for society's ills more effective than any magical blue flower could be. The seeker, Wilhelm Wheatling, had known personally and had listened with fraternal sympathy to the promises of the earthly paradise, which, to be a somewhat monarchical... To be a somewhat monarchical commune or joint stock company in which the workers pooled their gold, had been made by the French lawyer Etienne Cabet, a an undiscouraged Owen disciple who had attracted associations of idealistic utopia-minded migrants to America for ill-starred foundings of transient communes in imitation of his novel Voyage to Icarus. The symbolism of the name to be shown in time to be an unconsciously accurate prophecy in the new millennial world of America. As the wings of the possibly original Icarus had melted when he had flown too near the sun, so also the communities of the Icarians were to be as insubstantial as if they, with their canvases stretched on wire struts and swan feathers glued on with wax by an inexpert tailor, had also been consumed by fire. Their survival not to be long in the Texas of the monolithic land grabbers or upon the bluffs overlooking the Mississippi River, the Father of Waters at Nauvoo, Illinois, when they made their precarious settlement upon part of the old Mormon burned-out city of God and parcel of farmland where the legalized mob murder of the divinely inflated but secular many-colored utopian prophet Joseph Smith and his brother in the prison cell at Carthage, a place also aptly named. Wilhelm Wittling had also known the little books of the little French Catholic priest Huguet, Félicité Robert de Lamennais, who, because of his revolutionary messages equating Christ with communism, had suffered the anathema of excommunication placed upon him by the ecclesiastical powers, and was fortunate not to have been executed by the secular powers or lords temporal. So that always kind of confounds me that... Well, it doesn't, because you figure... Around, and it's been around every denomination of Christianity, Catholics, the different denominations of Protestantism, Protestant, I think Protestant is the largest one, and especially in the news recently with the Church of Latter-day Saints, that they're all worth roughly upwards of $30 billion. So you figure... Communism would not appeal to religion. Even when I lived overseas, the Buddhist temples were all, they own land. They have. I don't know if anybody's put a. Well, I don't know if they've been able to figure out a way to put a price on their holdings. Or of what they're worth, but I'm sure it's upwards of that much. So you have religion who has this huge investment in private property, basically, and being tax-free and just holding a whole lot of money. One denomination, let's take Catholics to begin with. $30+ billion, they could afford to give each man, woman, and child, every single person on the planet $1 million and still have billions left over. I mean, that's how much they're worth. That's how much individually they're all worth. That's why they're the ones, to our great chagrin, are the ones that invest in hospitals and the ones mucking up the nutrition system, because the USDA nutrition system is based on someone who had a vision from God in the 1800s that people needed to live off of vegetables. That would bring them closer to the Garden of Eden. Yeah, that's what our stuff is based off of. So I'm not surprised. It's not surprising that they weren't in favor of anything that would force the church to, I don't know, give up some of their stuff. Okay, sorry, where was I? Sometimes when revolutionary seekers after a better world could not be found, their books were brought to trial and executed in their place by burning and drowning, now is in the past. Yes, because book burnings are back in the U.S., hey! An idea that wasn't buried in history. Brigham Young, a man who could not spell the word millennium, but with the spirit of reform on him could speak in bird tongues, angel tongues, foreign tongues, tongues of prehistoric peoples, had preached in the streets of London, where he had made fewer converts because of the competition given to him by street preachers of other millennial faiths, some with only their dreams and no kingdom on earth to offer, than he had made in Manchester, where the Millennial Star was edited and thousands of Mormon hymnals were published on the eve of the Chartist riots. Brigham Young had seen boatloads of migrants off from busy English shipping wharves, many so poor that he had had to advance them the money for their fare lest they should never be able to reach the land of promise. The elder Young had been the harvester of the souls who were to join the community of saints, where the quick and the dead were always in communication with each other. He was sure, as he had written to his brother Joseph Young in the autumn of 1840, that the saints had so much the spirit of gathering in them that they would go to America even if they knew that they would be set upon by the mob as soon as they got there and would be driven on and on. They have the spirit of the times here as well as the church there. So I know that we're going on a lot about Wilhelm Wittling. I'm looking ahead here in a couple of chapters. But you have to remember, she is trying to cover the influences as to why Debs was the way he was. All right. Thank you for listening. Bye.